This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski on 104.5 The Zone.
Glad you're with us. Final hour is here. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, alongside Chad Withrow and David Reed. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Paul Kuharski is in a separate Zoom chat right now. We just wrapped up coverage listening to Ryan Tannehill, the Titans QB. Now we listen to his backup. Here's Logan Woodside.
You were placed on IR. There are times where guys get put on IR and they just kind of fade away and they're not there at the facility. But you were there on game plan install and you worked with Coach O'Hara like as if you were going to play. What made you want to be that involved even though you weren't going to be actually playing?
Well, I think, you know, this has just been my dream ever since I was a little kid is to make an active roster and to be in the NFL. And, you know, I used last year as just a, you know, a great, you know, learning atmosphere, you know, being around these coaches, being around the great staff, being around the players that we have. And just, although I couldn't do it on the field, just tried to really sharpen up mentally and continue to rehab. Because I knew if I continued to do that, you know, maybe I'd have another shot at it. And, you know, here we are. So it's really exciting and I'm looking forward to it.
A long time ago, you got the chance to work with Jeff Garcia and he was obviously a very gritty quarterback. He said he wanted to bring that out from you and he already saw it. At what point did you start to really, you know, develop that grit and that kind of chip that you play with?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes all the way back to being in high school and, you know, had to transfer high schools because I couldn't be a quarterback. And then when I got to college, you know, got benched twice, you know, was in a competition for 2 years and lost that battle and then end up redshirting in college and then coming out of it and being pretty successful. So, you know, this isn't the first time that I've, you know, gone through this type of situation. And I've just used those learning experiences to know that something's going to be better on the other side and just continue to work and good things are going to happen to you.
Teresa.
Hey, Logan, what do you think is your biggest attribute on the field? You know, there's been a lot of praise for your work ethic and Ryan said a little while ago that you've got the tools, but what do you think, is it the way you see the field? Is it your arm? What is your best attribute?
Well, I think it's just I know the offense really well and, you know, I know what the coaches are trying to get out of the plays. And, you know, I feel like that I have the accuracy and the timing to get the ball to the right people in the right times. And I think really that's the main thing is, you know, being smart with the football and just continuing to when we need to make a play that, you know, they'll trust me to make it.
Terry.
Logan, how much – I know you don't have any experience in any NFL games, but how much can you draw on your time in the AAF where you were a starting quarterback there to kind of feel that, what that game experience is like? What kind of things did you learn there?
Yeah, I mean, I took a lot out of that. You know, it was a really great opportunity for me to go, like you said, to go in and play against some really good competition. And then kind of like last year, I kind of compared it to the preseason games. I had about eight games in the AAF and just kind of tried to compare those to like playing in preseason games. And, you know, that's about as real as it can get other than being in a official game. So I just, you know, the speed of the game really got to pick up on, you know, it was a big difference from college to the AAF to the preseason and just kind of learned that way. And it was very beneficial for me.
Paul Carthy.
Hey, good to see you. Thanks. Who were you with mostly when you got guys together and where?
Yeah, I mean, we were just around Nashville. We were trying to be safe, you know, with all the, you know, the coronavirus that was going on, trying to be safe and apply to all the protocols. And, you know, we had a few guys coming in and out of Nashville. Anthony Ferkser was a guy that was there that we threw – that I got a ton of work with. You know, AJ was in town a lot, so got a lot of work with him. And then once the rookies came in, A couple of them came up here to Nashville. So Mason Kinsey, Nick Westbrook, KD. And those are guys that just – Adam Humphrey's another guy that has been in and out of town. So just kind of send them texts every now and then, hey, you in town, let's get together. And for the most part, it was really successful.
And what was the injury last year, and how long did it take? Like, was there a point at which you could have returned if you were a roster guy?
Yeah, it was just an arm injury. You know, it took a little longer than expected. But once I kind of got put on that the practice squad IR, I knew I probably couldn't come off of that. So I just tried to really focus on, you know, the mental aspect and then just the rehabilitation. And everything's great. I'm feeling great.
Throwing arm?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Buck.
Hey, Logan. With you and Cole primarily competing for the backup quarterback spot, how has it been to kind of, I know you guys probably just getting to know each other, haven't just gotten back to the facility, but how is it fostering a relationship with a guy that you're competing with at a time when it's particularly hard to have relationships with anybody?
Yeah, I mean, me and Cole, he had came in when Ryan had us throwing a couple months back. So I got to meet him when he got drafted, sent him a text. And then once he got here, he's been great. You know, I just look at from my perspective when I was a rookie, you know, I wanted to lean on somebody that knew what we were doing. And I want to be all the help that I can for him, because I know how that goes when you're a rookie. And, you know, it's tough when you come in learning a new offense, you know, moving to a new city. So just want to be a resource for him, and happy that he's on our team.
This is Titans backup quarterback Logan Woodside we're listening to as training camp begins on 104.5 The Zone.
The opportunities you had last year when you were on the injured list to grow and to learn, where do you think you have grown the most, maybe from your AAF days up to now? Where have you gotten better?
Well, I think obviously from a mental standpoint, just seeing a lot of tape, going through a whole year of game planning for other opponents, I think that was really big for me, going on the road, being in that environment, even though I wasn't playing, just being in that type of environment, hearing what was going on, being able to communicate with, you know, Ryan and Marcus on the sideline. And then physically, I think that I've continued to get stronger. And I think really that's the main point. Just I really tried to work on my strength and just to get my body right and in the best shape possible coming into this camp.
Gentry?
Yeah, hey, Logan. I'm curious, as you kind of go back, you mentioned your high school career and then, you know, coming out of high school, coming out of college, why do you think you've kind of been – overlooked or underestimated, you know, given you've had some success along the way?
I don't really know, to be honest. I just, you know, I try not to look too much into it. I just kind of go off of the life experiences that I've had, and I wouldn't trade it for the world, because it's definitely helped put me in the position that I am today. And you know, just continue to work and ignore the outside noise, and good things will happen.
Yeah, and with the Titans this offseason, I mean, it's pretty clear they're committed to giving you a shot at the backup job here. How much has it meant to you that they do seem to have such faith in you for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's meant the world to me. And, you know, the only thing I can do is control what I can control and give them everything I got. You know, this whole offseason was tough, you know, not being in the building, but in the back of my mind, I knew that, you know, the Titans were counting on me, and I definitely didn't want to let them down because of the great opportunities that they've given me, for sure.
Johnny?
Good afternoon, Logan. Back in 2015, you redshirted after starting the previous season at Toledo due to injury. Is last year for you with the Titans similar to what you learned from a mental standpoint and those kind of things that can help you in 2020 in this role?
Yeah, I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head there. You know, when I was at Toledo, you know, didn't redshirt my true freshman year, had played, and then had another quarterback come in from Alabama that had transferred, Philip Ely, and just kind of learned from him. Yeah, I needed to take a year back to see it from a coach's perspective. I still got to continue to practice, you know, even though I was redshirting, but not playing in the games, that was really tough on me, man. That was a tough point, but just took everything I could from it. And then the next year, you know, obviously came out and was really successful. And I think a lot of it had to deal with that redshirt year ahead.
All right. That's all the questions. We appreciate your time, Logan.
Perfect.
That's Logan Woodside. First time we've heard from him in a presser setting as training camp begins. When you look at the backup roster right now and the fact that with COVID-19, Chad, surrounding all teams, we have stressed all offseason the backup quarterback role extremely important. And currently, that role goes to Logan Woodside.
Yeah, it was good hearing his voice and hearing him talk about the position. But that position is of utmost importance in every season, but especially this year, and some we've talked about a lot. So certainly looks like that's the direction the Titans are going in this year. There are some options out there of veteran backups, but Hutton, you've gone through the list before. Not a lot of appealing options for veteran backup.
No, it's kind of like pass rusher right now in the open market. You've got, other than Clowney, there's not much. The quarterback group doesn't have that Clowney out there. That's the big difference. There's Clowney and everyone else. And with the QB list, it's just you grab one and you're practically getting the same type of talent or success rate that they've had at the pro level. 615-737-1045, our number. 737-1045. Chad, let's open up the phone lines today. We've been very busy with guests and conversation. We can take some calls here. Really, it'll be the first time all week we've done that. We can open it up for NFL discussion, Titans training camp discussion, Vic Beasley talk, what we've heard there from the quarterbacks, and we can get into high school football, the debate to play or not to play, and Davidson County versus the surrounding counties. 615-737-1045, our number. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 1045 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Online, edleysbbq.com. And from the owners of Edley's Barbecue, locally owned, by the way, Will and Catherine Newman, they bring you Poncho and Lefty's Cantina, right across the street from Bridgestone Arena. But the one you can find right now that's easily accessible is in Sylvan Park. It's right across the street from Edley's Barbecue in Sylvan Park. And you can find Edley's at two other locations, 12 South and in East Nashville. Crew's all here, David Reed, doing great work there with the pressers. Paul, the biggest takeaway was the injury unveiling that we heard about Logan Woodside and what put him on IR. It was the throwing arm.
I thought so. He didn't get into the specifics of what the arm injury was, but I kind of asked if he had been a roster guy, would he have had the potential to come back? And he didn't say yes or no, but he did say it took him longer to rehab it than they anticipated. But that he's fine now. And he also offered up when I asked him who he worked out with, you know, because we made a big deal, and I think fairly so, out of Tannehill and Jonnu Smith having a lot of time together. Well, Logan Woodside had a lot of time with Anthony Firkser, was the number one guy that he said a ton of work with Anthony Firkser. And also A.J. Brown was the next guy he mentioned. Then he mentioned rookies, Kirksey, Westbrook. He also mentioned Humphreys. So I think those are important things to know. You know, Logan Woodside got a lot of offseason work in, and he threw with those guys specifically. I think that's valuable information to know that he's got more of a connection with those guys than he's going to have with other guys because he was with them.
Another note is that Tannehill, we already knew he was working with Jonnu Smith. He's also working in Florida with Darrington Evans. He mentioned that. That's big because
I missed that. That slipped through. Great piece of information.
He said that at the end. And that, you know, Darrington Evans, the rookies reported when quarterbacks reported. So, for instance, you're seeing Tom Brady and some highlights of him throwing passes at practice with the Bucks.
Boy, you would think. They dressed that up to be like NFL Films quality stuff.
I would do the same thing.
The little tweet they put out. I would
do the same thing.
Market
again.
The hell out of it.
You know, there are only a handful of teams that are going to do new business, and two of them for sure, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The rest of the league is trying to keep the current business they have during this coronavirus situation that we have.
You're absolutely right.
And
they talked about
they should promote TB12 to the moon.
Yeah, And they will. He talked about Evans, you know, specifically said talented, explosive, fast, great at catching the football, adds another element to the offense. And I think, I think that's been our standard answer. When you look at this football team and ask how it's different than last year's football team, there isn't that much. But on offense, I think the one thing that you would say is layered into the passing game, particularly on third down, there is a legitimate pass catching threat at running back, and not just a guy who's going to run out to catch a screen or run out and turn around, right, and put his hands up like waiting for the ball with his feet set at a spot. This is a guy that's going to catch the ball in all kinds of different ways if he is what we think he is. And it sounds like Ryan Tannehill's experience with him so far is that he is what we think he is.
Oh, he can run the route tree. You know, he can run the seam out of the backfield. So, yeah, I think we'll see that. He's been working, again, I think that's a big note. He's been working with the rookie tailback. That's a layer that they can add with this offense if Evans can come in and be ready to help out this offense with some critical plays in week one. Cosell, during the offseason, has told us after his extensive study on first down, specifically on Ryan Tannehill, he said, look, there's two areas where we could see more production from Tannehill and they could build on things. First, he mentioned Jonnu Smith, but then he mentions Derrick Henry in the screen game. Not necessarily both Derrick Henry or the screen game from the running back position, because that would also mean Darrington Evans. But he thinks, Cosell thinks, there's more to the screen game on first down, not necessarily as we always think of it on the third and right, medium range, where they're dumping down and trying to get the first down.
And that's interesting to me. The one question is, and maybe you're good enough to do this, right? If I see Darrington Evans on the field on first down, though, what am I thinking defensively?
Well,
you're thinking he's getting the ball on a screen, right? Otherwise,
well, unlike Deion Lewis, he can run the football.
I know, but why? And you're going to have him run the football some to be unproductive. But what are we going to be saying in a press box? You know, Darrington Evans might be good running the football, but I don't want to see him running the football on first down. I want to see Derrick Henry running the football on first down.
Agreed.
Right. So we're going to be saying, why is Evans on the field on first down? Well, he's on the field to be catching a screen that he might take 8 yards to get you in second and two, which Derrick Henry is going to come in and convert. But, you know what I'm saying? It's going to be predictable if Darrington Evans is on the field outside of third down that they want to get the passing offense going with a running back. And that's part of the problem with having a very split backfield in terms of who does what.
Chad, the decision makers are split on what to do for high school football locally. I mentioned this yesterday whenever we were discussing the TSSAA and the governor, where Governor Lee said that we could see some padded practices, contact sports, and he signed that in. But then I threw out, well, what if you have a local health board that overrides that decision? And there, you can look around the state. You'll see one here with Metro Nashville, Memphis, Chattanooga, Knoxville. Those are prime areas across the state for high school football. And I bet we're going to see something like that with Shelby County. We know it's happening right now with Metro Nashville.
Well, in Knox County, I know a lot of coaches there were fearful that that decision was going to be made last night at their Knox County board meeting.
Yeah.
They did not make that decision. They said it's not nowhere near Nashville and Davidson County right now, and it's an area that is warm but not hot, you know, or heating up the way Nashville is, so they're going to still have padded practice there. I'm going to read you just a paragraph, the important paragraph from the letter that was sent to coaches and schools in Davidson County. So, background, Wednesday, if you're a high school football fan, you get the good news from the state and the governor that the Executive Order 55 would be signed, allowing for high school football, the TSSAA, just like NFL and college, they can start fully padded practice contact, opening the door for an August 21st kickoff, which was originally scheduled. Now, yesterday, this started circulating to metro schools and private schools in Nashville. They open up with basically everything and every precaution and every thought being put in place with school opening back up in Nashville. And then they go on to say, one concern among school and health leaders is the unintentional spread of COVID-19 that may occur between schools when students from one school participate in interscholastic sports or extracurricular activities at another school. These activities are an important part of the school experience, but in the current situation, we should focus on minimizing the spread of the virus and ensuring that school can continue. As such, on behalf of the Metro Public Health Department and the Nashville's Planning Committee on how to safely reopen schools, we are asking that you commit your school to not holding any in-person interscholastic sports and extracurricular activities until at least after Labor Day. Two big words there. Mm-hmm. Ask and at least, when you look at that, at least after Labor Day, which has a lot of coaches thinking this season's not happening because they're just going to continue to extend it after Labor Day. How are things going to be better 2 weeks later after the rest of this? Everyone else in the state, let's say, starts August 21st. They wait 2 weeks, then they're going to try to start a season. And by the way, not having any contact up until that point, possibly, which is still a little vague on that. They're talking about no extracurricular activities when school starts back. So could they, because they're allowed by the TSSAA, practice now in full pads, but not have interscholastic sports among other schools once they start? Either way, this letter was signed by the director of Metro Nashville Schools, the chairman of the Nashville Charter School System, Dr. Alex Jahanger, who is the head of the Metro Coronavirus Task Force, and Brad Joya, who is the headmaster of MBA. He's also the president of the Independent Schools of Nashville. So what does all this mean? It means there's no football in Metro Nashville. Every coach I've talked to, and we're going to talk to Buck Fitzgerald, who talks to every coach in Nashville, coming up at 1:45. No one's going to fight this at a public school. Too much at stake. They're not going to get into it with the school board. A lot of the members of the school board don't even know high school football exists, quite frankly, and don't care. They would be surprised that any high school coach would even go and ask, what do you mean? What is this football thing that you talk about? They don't even care one way or the other. So they're not going to fight it. There's no way they can do it. They'd get fired if they went about trying to play games outside of the county or do whatever it was if you're a public school. Now, on the private school side of this, MBA, the headmaster at MBA is signing this, is the head of the independent school system. Last I checked, Montgomery Bell Academy, pretty powerful private school in Nashville, pretty powerful football program also. Mm-hmm. They're out. Now, let's say that, again, hypothetically, let's say in Innsworth, MBA's rival in Davidson County decided, the governor's saying this, our governing body is saying this, we're going to play. We're going to ask for an injunction with the city, and we're going to go out there and we're going to play our schedule and play our games. I don't know what that would look like. I don't know if Metro Nashville would then send police officers to the game on Friday night to disperse people in the crowd. I don't know exactly what that fight would entail. There are some private schools. I'll throw a Father Ryan in there also in Davidson County. A lot of prominent alumni, a lot of lawyers also attached to those schools. There could be a program that just out of an experiment decided to fight this with the city of Nashville, saying that the state's orders overrides them in their decision. I don't see that happening right now. I'm just throwing that out as a possibility. Again, only a possibility, in my opinion, with a private school, with a powerful private school to do that. I don't think any public school in Nashville is going to fight it. And for that reason, I think you're going to have a lot of teams that decide there's going to be no season. They're not going to try to start late. And other ones, they're going to try to piecemeal a season together, you know, 2-3 weeks into the season. So certainly not ideal for those programs.
Couldn't you pick up wherever it starts and then try to tag stuff on at the end? Are you totally messed up for playoffs that involve everybody else who started at a different time?
Well, that's, and we'll talk to Buck about this. I think a big part of that, the answer to that question, Paul, is are they allowed to practice full contact? Because if they're not allowed, if they're shutting down full contact practice in Nashville starting now, I don't see any way you have a season. If it's going to be a 2 or 3 week ramp up starting after Labor Day, there's a month left in the season at that point when they're allowed to come back and play, if it's going to take them that long to get ready. And I don't think you can ask kids to get out there, you know, the following Friday, having not put on pads and practiced the entire offseason to go play a game that Friday night.
The other thing, too,
when everyone else has been practicing and playing for as long as they have.
Let's hypothetically here say that they start playing September 18th. If that's the case, the rest of the schools are in week five. I mean, if you start on August 21st, you're looking 5 weeks ahead. So I don't see that as a realistic thing. Also, and I'm simply asking this because I don't know what the rules are in place here. Is it too late for a player to walk into another high school if they, quote unquote, move and play for a different school? I ask that because there is some gray area here where if you're in Metro and you're a pretty good player and you have the idea that they may play in September, you're left in limbo because what happens if the season gets underway across the state and you want to play, your parents are cool with you playing, whatever. What happens if we get 3 weeks into the season and Metro says, you know what? We're scrapping the season. We recommend they not play at all, even though we recommended initially September 18th. While everyone else is playing and this kid could have gone somewhere else to play football if they so choose, based on the rules and based on the governor. How does that work? You know, that's another question that impacts individual players, students, families.
If they move, Hutton, they can go play wherever they want. They'd have to physically move addresses. Right. And they could go play across the line in Mount Juliet, at Ravenwood, at Brentwood, wherever is playing high school football into a different county.
At any point in the season, though?
I believe so. I'd have to double-check the TSSAA rules, but if there's a physical change of address, you are afforded the right to play high school sports at that school when you get there. But that's just not feasible for a lot of the kids we're talking about to physically change addresses and go play.
But it is feasible for the legitimate athletes. The Reggie Grimes of the world, they'll go play at Ravenwood. They'll leave Mount Juliet, go play at Ravenwood on a dime.
Yeah, yeah.
So – That goes on. I'm just wondering, like, is there a cutoff date where you can actually suit up and play for another team, which would certainly impact certain rosters.
And that's an unintended consequence of this whole thing.
And Chad knows where I'm going with this. I'm talking about the top players in the mid-state that have the college offers or are trying to go from a 3-star to a 4 or 5-star rating.
Well, put all that aside for a second. The TSSAA honestly could just say it's wild, wild west for 1 year. If you're in Metro and you have an offer to go play at another school, you can go play. Because if we can allow Tim Tebow, who's homeschooled, to play at Bowles Institute in Jacksonville, a prestigious private high school at the time, because he's afforded the right to play high school football, then because one county that's surrounded by a bunch of counties that are allowed to play high school football, because that individual county, their health department say you can't play high school football this year, should that prevent them from going, let's say you're 3 miles from the county line, from going over to Mount Juliet or the new Green Hill High School in Mount Juliet and playing? Shouldn't you be allowed and afforded the right to do that, even if you attend a different school, whether it be virtual or not? You could make that argument, but boy, you're opening a door for, I mean, it's the wild, wild west. I mean, you're going to go recruit. You know, every program, I mean, I'm just going to name powerhouse programs that have taken transfers before. Oakland, Ravenwood, Mount Juliet, everywhere in that circle around Nashville. I'll throw a Hendersonville, Gallatin in there also as a possibility. They're going to go to Pearl Cone and Maplewood and everywhere and say, let's get your best athletes to come play with us this year. We can get you ready for the season, and you'll look good in our uniform for this season. And especially a lot of kids who are trying to get recruited, could that be an opportunity for them? Absolutely. I don't see the TSSAA doing that. I think, unfortunately, for the high school football player in Nashville, you're just out of luck this year because I don't think they're going to play. Honestly, when I see at least until after Labor Day,
right?
I don't see any way they're playing a season with those schools in Davidson County. And again, we're not just talking about the Metro Nashville public schools. We're talking about CPA. That's barely in Davidson County, but in Davidson County. We're talking about Innsworth, Father Ryan, MBA, who signed off on this letter. A lot of big-time private schools that now won't be playing football. FRA. I mean, go down the list. DCA. A lot of different schools that will be affected by this.
Is Cane Ridge in that?
Oh, yeah. Cane Ridge is a part of it. I mean, there are some big games. Just, for instance, Brentwood MBA, scheduled to play August 21st. That's done. That was a big public-private matchup. That's not happening.
That was week one on my TV 30, by the way.
And think about Brentwood. How many Davidson County schools are on their schedule that are lost now? Gallatin is a great example. Their region, most of the teams are Metro schools. Mm-hmm. They don't have a region anymore.
That's right.
So they're scrambling for games and to see if they're going to have a season. It doesn't just affect Davidson County. It affects every school that's playing a team in Davidson County this year.
We will see this happen with the individual health boards across this state. I think we'll see it in Memphis. We'll see it in Knoxville. We will see this in Chattanooga.
I think we're definitely going to see it in Memphis.
Unintended consequences, and I don't think that it's not that they haven't considered them. Well, I don't think they've considered them, but I also think they don't care. They're just doing the one thing that they feel like is the one thing they have to do, and all this other stuff is trickle down effect that they aren't. It's not their primary concern, so they're not worried about
it. It's doing its job. I mean, they're saying they're doing its job. You know, they're there for a reason. They're giving their opinion on what should be done, and meanwhile, you have the governor that's opening the doors to this, and so it's a wild, wild west from that aspect too, because there's no middle ground here. It's either you're playing or you're not. There's no in between. And as of 48, 72 hours ago, they're playing August 21st.
I mean, I think the Metro Health Board is probably doing exactly what they feel needs to be done. Just like I think the governor is probably doing exactly what he thinks needs to be done for the betterment of the state and the betterment of the student out there. And I'm going to have my opinion. My opinion comes from someone who's a sports fan who covers high school football also. So I'm biased on this. But this also screams of like just about everything going on right now of a political serve and volley. The governor, the Republican governor, says one thing one day, and then the Democratic mayor the next day of Nashville, his people come back and say, nope, not so fast, you're not playing. It just screams of that to people on the outside because there's this constant serve and volley both ways. I'm going to show how much more I care about COVID-19 than the Republican governor, so we're not playing football in Davidson County. Whether that's true or not, it certainly has that appearance, like a lot of things right now in our country has that appearance.
Coming up, Buck Fitzgerald will join us, Chad.
Yes, he will. He's the head of National Playmakers Academy, NPA, works with a lot of high school athletes in the area, works with a lot of coaches. We'll get his perspective on what no football in Davidson County might look like and some of the implications with that.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone.
Best financial move you can make. Call Loan Pronto now to get started. 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS 1661-781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible.
So will we see high school football played next month? That's the big debate right now going on between the Metro Health Board and the state of Tennessee. Maybe no debate, just differing opinions on that, and that would certainly impact Davidson County versus the surrounding counties in the mid-state. Chad, it's time to get the perspective of someone who will certainly know that. That's Buck Fitzgerald.
Yeah, so Buck Fitzgerald, he heads up NPA, National Playmakers Academy. So he works with a lot of student athletes, high school football players in the area. A lot of them play in Davidson County. Buck, also the son of legendary Metro Nashville coach Maurice Fitzgerald, who also happens to be the current head coach at Hillsborough High School, who is certainly affected by this. First off, Buck, thanks for hopping on with us. And I guess I'll start with this. What has the reaction been for coaches in Davidson County, both public and private, to the email they received yesterday?
It's been chaotic. You know, it's I don't know that a lot of people, a lot of coaches really expected that, especially with the news coming down from the governor and his executive order. And so I think, you know, it shocked a lot of coaches, and it really was a sense of panic because it doesn't only affect the Davidson County, Nashville Davidson County schools. We have a mutual friend, Coach Chad Watson in Gallatin, who's a great coach and great guy. And he called me, you know, trying to figure out what's going on with Hillsborough because they're in the same district. And if they have to push their games back, you know, what does that do to his conference games? And so, you know, Gallatin is a team with Coach Chad that, you know, that's a state championship level program, you know, and so they're really in limbo right now, trying to figure out who do they schedule? Do they change the schedule? Are they going to play a district schedule? You know, so it's just really chaotic right now.
Well, and you know this from the player's perspective, and you work with guys who are going to go play in the SEC or the Big Ten or the Big 12 that know they're going to have a scholarship offer no matter what and probably wouldn't even have to play football this year. You also work with guys who are trying to, as you've said before, Buck, the UT Martin type level player, the OVC guy who's trying to get that scholarship also. They need this season to happen. So those guys you work with in Davidson County, what are their options now? Do they have any options in terms of what they can do?
You know, it remains to be seen. You know, what's scary to me is when you read the letter, it says at least Labor Day, if I'm not mistaken. And so, you know, that's it throws, again, people are in chaos. So if you have a FCS level guy, or Division II level guy, NAIA level guy, you know, they are evaluated mostly on their senior season film. And if they don't have senior season film, then, you know, maybe their junior film is good enough. But you know as well as I do, the growth between the junior year and senior year, these kids aren't even the same person anymore. You know, so they've had a lot of growth and lifted and ran and developed. And who knows if they'll be able to display that. And it really changes lives. It changes the trajectory of some of a young kid's life.
And also, you know well, Buck, about the trajectory of a young person's life with football and how a lot of the kids we're talking about, there's a lot of different circumstances out there. Maybe that three-hour window that they're still at school getting ready for practice and then practicing, maybe that's the gap they need to get home and have a guardian around them. Maybe it's a route to go to college where otherwise they're not going to have that route. And that's the kid you really feel bad for in all of this, especially with Metro Nashville schools.
Yeah, you and I were talking earlier. You know, we had an unfortunate situation. A kid that was in my program, kid went to ProCon, was a standout. Andre McDonald was tragically shot and killed maybe 3 weeks ago. And, you know, he didn't, for whatever reason, didn't stick to in college. And his life changed, you know, kind of went on a downward trajectory. After that, great kid. He and Jalen Ramsey became really good friends through mutual admiration and wanted to go to school together. Jalen went and Andre didn't. And you see the outcome. You know, one's a top five draft pick, one making millions of dollars, and the other one tragically killed on Jefferson Street at four broad daylight at 4 p.m. So, you know, I think when people make these decisions, a lot of times that's not considered. You know, the opportunities, we're all grown ups. We've all had these experiences and our opportunities to go to college and earn our way. And these kids are going through that phase of their life that we were able to go through and earn our way or not. And so it's really tragic for those kids and their opportunities.
Buck Fitzgerald from NPA National Playmakers Academy is our guest. Buck, do you feel like the public school coaches you've spoken with, are they all going to sit back and do whatever their school board tells them to do? Could you see an outlier private school program possibly bucking the system, no pun intended, and deciding that they're going to go against it and try to play football regardless of what the county says?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I struggle to see a metro or public school anywhere, not just here, but anywhere in the nation really going against their superiors. There's too many levels, too many stopgaps right there. You know, that's not going to happen. But I can see a private school or two or three banding together and saying, hey, you know what? If we're not going to play, we can go play independent ball. We have enough resources to go out and put together a national schedule or, you know, play guys from Georgia or Alabama who don't have a schedule. I could see private entities popping up and saying, hey, kids, come over here. And we'll field a team and we'll play other independent teams, sort of like, you know, AAU with basketball. I can see that it's a little tougher with football, where they're going to play. There's a lot of logistics to come into place. But I just don't see people, you know, with so much on the line, jobs on the line, just kind of sitting back and taking this. Not in football, not with all the money and everything that's wrapped into it.
Buck, we were talking a few weeks ago on the show about, look, it, hypothetically here, if Virginia shut down football but Carolina was playing, better believe a lot of parents would take their kids and play in North Carolina. I'm expecting this to be a county-by-county deal here, with, you know, a random apartment being rented somewhere and a kid's going to play at a different school. And I'm sure that's already rampant anyway, but this just adds the exclamation point, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. You know, it, you will see that happening out of sheer necessity. You know, if I'm a kid, like Chad talked about, I'm on the border and I need this to earn a college scholarship. That's a small price to play to go, to pay to go and get that opportunity. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to see people find loopholes and take advantage of the rules and where they can possibly play. But, you know, there's too much at stake, you know, not to do that. So, yeah, you're right. You're going to see state to state movement. You're going to see county to county movement. You're going to see. And then how does the TSSAA police that? Can they police that? You know, right. I know that those talks have already been happening. The people in Virginia were pretty much anticipating their season being shut down because of the politics involved and a governor that leans one way opposed to a governor leading the other way. And so they were pretty much, some of them were prepared for that and calling Tennessee and seeing where they can land. Now Tennessee people are doing the same thing. So
crazy. Load up the pickup.
Yep. Yep.
And a short amount of time too. I mean, we're less than a month away now. You know,
yeah.
3 weeks, three. Yes.
It's not the intended. It's not the intended consequence, but they don't.
Right. Right.
I mean, they tomorrow don't care. We're 3 weeks away. Take care of the primary thing.
3 weeks away from the kickoff of high school football season, which is crazy to think.
Well, which adds another issue, you know, just from a preparedness and health situation and our kids, you know, in condition, are they acclimated to physical contact at this point? You know, there's so many unknowns, it's unbelievable.
Buck Fitzgerald has been our guest. Thank you for the perspective. We always appreciate whenever you hop on with us.
Nice to see you,
Buck.
No doubt. Thank you, guys.
Been a busy show. And so just like
Tennessee
that, Paul,
high school football sports, your site, Chad, is going to look like a donut.
Well, no, there's high school football happening.
I know, but it's going
to be the center
map. It's going to look like a donut.
We're back at it tomorrow. Hit the podcast page, 180 on demand, and, of course, the 180 at 6 this evening. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
Don't block the box, but definitely lock the lock.